Blog Talk Radio.
Ready, steady, go!
Rusty. Okay, am I back?
I am. Somebody's back.
Did we lose Rusty? Technical difficulties, sometimes she has a problem with the Skype. Well, for the listeners, let me introduce our guest. I've known Hansi Danhek for about 5 years. I met him at the Masters Hall of Fame 2007 when my buddy Sophie Greg Woolbridge was inducted. And I was inducted in 2008 and been an ambassador ever since. Hansi, welcome to the show.
How you doing, Greg? Robert, how you doing?
Do we have Rusty back?
I
still can't hear Sifu Rusty, but she did do the applause. I don't know if her mic's muted or what, but
I'm not sure. So what's been going on with the Dynamic Radio Show?
You know, we're having a lot of fun, you know. We're having a lot of good people, a lot of good callers, a lot of good subject matter. Just hope she doesn't leave me out here to flounder because we've got a lot of stuff to go through. You know, Hansi, like I mentioned on the show, I tell stories every now and then, actually every week, and probably some of the listeners don't believe me. Well, Friday night, so I was thinking, well, I have nothing funny to tell this week. Friday night, and, you know, guys, we sometimes don't filter our conversations. Our filters sometimes go off, especially when it comes to our wives. So I know. It's ridiculous. So my family is basically Catholic. We're spiritual, but we're not religious. My son, every third Sunday of the month, goes out and plays drums at what they call Rock and Shabbat, which is at a Jewish temple. And he gets paid for this. Well, my wife and I drop him off, and we're driving home, and there's this guy selling flowers at the side of the road. And I'm thinking, what in the hell do I need flowers for this time of night? And I put my head down and started shaking it, and I go, oh, my God, she's in the car with me.
You big dummy.
And she, I could feel her eyes burning through my soul. And yesterday, it was really funny. I was driving down the street taking my daughter to school. She had an audition for next year's choir. And this guy, I see this old guy turning a very old car, 30s or 40s. And he's, I guess the steering's so bad, he turns into my lane. And not going into his at all. I'm freaking out. I'm flashing my high beams at him. I'm just about ready to lay on the horn when he pulls over into the next lane. I'm going, okay, we're cool. My daughter looks at me and goes, she goes, Dad, I said, what? She starts laughing. She says, that was Jay Leno.
You big dummy.
That is funny.
You know, he's got
we got somebody back. I keep hearing some stuff in the background.
Yeah, but I don't think she has her mic on.
That's you guys had some new. You got some new equipment with the board, right?
She must. It must just be jacking her up right now because she's able to press the sound effects and everything else. She just can't talk right now, which usually I'd say that's a good thing, but not when I'm out here floundering.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, so
and right now,
go ahead. What's going on? Well, what's going on in your world? Are you doing anything else besides getting ready for the Masters?
You know, that's
I'm interviewing
pretty much
you now.
It right now. That's pretty much it. You know, the nominations are closed for the Masters. I'm really looking forward to it on the 22nd of June.
Now I just lost you.
Oh, did you just lose me?
Yeah.
Are you there?
No, I'm here. I got you.
Oh, okay. Because Sifu Rusty was texting me at the same time, and I really can't read this out loud. I guess
maybe
you can
we
hear
could.
Us.
It could be funny for the show.
Huh?
So it could be funny for the show. So
it could be. Well, she texted me. And she says because of what I just said about her speaking. She said, "You ass, LOL." I don't know what I'm going on with my effing mic.
Wow.
So
okay.
She's having a
maybe
problem.
Maybe that's not appropriate for the show.
No, it wasn't until I got to that one word. So right now, so the nominations are closed. I'm nominated as good people. I understand. I've got Patrick McDaniel, Wes Bennett, Jason Mejia, Girlia Bad. Those are the four that I know that are coming at the present right now. Those are the ones that are dedicated. And two of them, one of them, you know, Wes, he's coming from Illinois. Patrick McDaniel's coming from North Carolina. So they're coming a long ways.
Right.
She's going to let me out here and flounder. But that's okay. We can move on. So tell us, Hanchi, a little bit about your background. Martial arts wise, military wise, that sort of thing.
So, my martial arts world started when I went into service. I got assigned to, and one of the reasons I went into service is I used to be a big Chuck Norris fan, and Chuck Norris was an Air Force guy, and he was an Air Force cop, and I went into security forces, security police at the time, because I wanted to be like Chuck Norris. Honest to God. So I go in the Air Force because Chuck Norris was in the Air Force, and history was set. I went to the Philippines and started studying Arnes, and I screamed about there. It was Arnes when I was there. Did that for 2 years, and then I went from Clark Air Base Philippines, which I really enjoyed. Now, the martial arts in the Philippines, their stick fighting is just outstanding. I can't talk enough about their stick stick fighting. So one of my main instructor over there, and I don't know his last name, but his first name was Sensei Ernie. Ernie suggested that we travel a little bit. So I was a young airman, 20 years old, 18, 19, 20 years old. I jumped on a military hop, and went to Japan, then Korea. And I trained over there in Japan. I trained at the Shotokan Dojo on the base, and then when I went to Korea, I trained with the Rock Guards. So yeah, I did. You know, it was like 2 weeks that I went, a week at one place and a week at another, and I trained 5 days a week over there at both countries and on both bases. But it really opened my eyes to differences in martial arts, and right then, I became a connoisseur of martial arts. I said, you know, there's a lot to learn out here. I mean, the style differences from the Philippines to Japan were much, much different. They were much more, I don't want to say rigid, but formalized than Eskrima was or Arnes was. And then when I went to Korea, their workouts were incredibly physical, unbelievable physical. We were on these... You had to climb up these poles, right, and do single-leg squats. And you were, like, 10 feet off the ground doing single-leg squats with the Rock Guards. So it was a pretty interesting development in my early age on the different styles of martial arts, how they trained. But I did realize right then that it's stylistic. It's not the art. It's a lot of the stuff that you're doing is how good of an athlete you are makes you a better martial artist. So from there, I left Clark Air Base, and I went to Wurzburg, Michigan, and I started studying Muay Thai over there with Bob. His name, I can't remember Bob's last name either, but I studied there for about 2 years also. Came out to California and ended up with O-Sensei Jesus Miguel Sanchez, and he is what I would consider my primary instructor. He's the one that really taught me Budo, and that was Goju, USA Go Urban System Goju. And, you know, I cannot talk enough about the depth of understanding from the martial arts I got from training with O-Sensei. We trained together for many years. I even lived with him for 4 years, just about 4 years, from brown to black. When I made brown back to black, which took me about 4 years to make, I was Ichi-san. I was his senior student. And I lived with him and got karate every day, all day. So it was kind of an interesting development in how, you know, being a disciple of that system, the difference in the traditional karate school, going to the dojo, training for an hour or an hour and a half or 2 hours, whatever your training was, versus living, eating, breathing karate. And that was my kind of wake up call in being a Budo martial artist, somebody that lived it, ate it, breathed it, and was defined by his martial arts experience. Kiyoshi, our O-Sensei, moved to up north in California. He's also in law enforcement. He got signed up to, I think, Central California, Ojai type area. But anyway, I got started training with Sensei Dai, Otto Johnson, a couple other people, and I've been with Sensei Dai ever since. So that's kind of a breakdown in a nutshell of my 30-plus years of martial arts experience. Never would trade it in for anything. Loved every bit of it.
Now, last year, Hanshi, you actually retired from the Air Force, correct?
Mm-hmm. October 2012. What's
now,
that?
You were obviously in a full 30 years.
32?
32 years. Now, what were the various jobs you held? You know, you traveled the world. You studied. You had the ability to train with so many different people. Tell us a little bit about your military experience.
I sure will. You know, it's funny to say that. I took every opportunity. My first 4 years was on active duty, and I trained every place I went. Didn't matter where I was. Kind of a dojo bastard. I would go from one dojo to the next, to the next, to the next. And you know, I learned a trick out there. For all you listeners, you know, if you're a guy that likes to train and like to be challenged, go dojo hopping. But here's the trick. Don't spar the first night you're there. You lose respect from the sensei. He thinks you're challenging him, and he's going to put the meanest and baddest, and they're going to pound the snot out of you. You're going to pound the snot out of them. There's going to be blood all over the floor, right? And you don't gain anything by that besides testing your skills. And there's better ways to do that. What I did is I would go for the workout. And there you're a new black belt coming into that dojo. That class is going to be significant. You know, they're going to put you through your paces. And, you know, when you're standing up at the end and all these other kids are huffing and puffing and you're still doing your thing and they say, oh, it's time to spar, you say, I didn't come here for sparring, sensei. I came for the workout. Came to exchange and just be a student of his and not show him what you know, but learn what he has to offer. And I tell you, that little bit of wisdom I got from O-Sensei was better than anything else, any training I've ever gotten. When you go to somebody else's dojo, learn what they have to offer. Don't try to show them what you have to offer. And that time will come. And, you know, I would go to someplace in the military, and that's what I would do. I'd go to their dojos, come in and say, hey, I'm going to be here for a couple of weeks, I'd like to train with you. And, you know, immediately want to put on the sparring gear and fight. I'm like, no, I'm not here for that. By the end of my week or 2 weeks I was at that place, I would end up sparring there. But it's after I built trust, broke bread with them, had a good time. And, you know, that's a unique experience in itself. But that's what I did for the rest of the time, for the most part, was my reserve time in the Air Force. And I got to travel all over, and I went to Panama. I fought in their Panama Internationals and took heavyweight in Kumite. Didn't win the Grand Championship. I lost Grand Championship. It was a really, really good fight, though. It was a really good fight. And then I won in Spain also. So I've got to travel and compete all over the world.
Oh, very cool. Now, you're a cop. You're a police officer with a major university. I'm curious. Who writes your paychecks? Are you a state employee?
No, I work directly for the University of Southern California.
Okay, got it. Tell us what that's like, because you and I have discussed it, you know, your job, and you actually go outside of the – you actually run a perimeter to help LAPD out. What's that like being a cop on a university compared to a street patrol?
Well, we have a lot of guys that retire from L.A. or come from L.A. for various reasons to USC. And I was talking to a buddy of mine that just came from USC. I trained him. Anytime you come from one agency to another, you got to go through what's called a field training program. So this guy that came from USC was 20 years with L.A. He was a sergeant plus, so he was a sergeant with a rocker. He's probably forgot more than I'll ever know about law enforcement, but he still got to ride with me, and I got to train him on the way that we do it at USC. He made the comment that we respond to more calls than he ever did at the LAPD. So the calls, and a lot of them for us are noise complaints, drunk students, but we also have significant amount of armed robberies, sexual assaults. I mean, it runs the full gamut. A university is a small community, and you have all the same problems that any small community would have. I'll give you an example, another example. What would you like when you're 18, 19, and 20? I mean, your decision-making wasn't the best. You would stretch the limits of every situation. So we have all those situations at a university where you got drunk kids stretching their legal limits. I don't know how to say it any more polite. But we have all the same problems that any city has, and sometimes more with that age group from 18. I think it's harder to police a group of kids from 18 to 22 than it is a normal, regular society, because there's established rules and people abide by those rules for the most part. So, but it is a lot of fun. We were on a couple different calls last night. We're LAPD integrated with us, and it's a seamless relationship with LAPD and the university.
Now, are there a lot of arrests made, or is it more warning, more tickets for drunk and disorderly, underage drinking? I'm sure you have a big problem with.
We have a two-tier system. Yeah, okay. Alcohol is a big problem in any college campus. And we have a two-tier system. We have what's internally, we have what's called judicial affairs. And it does more damage than a ticket, because that judicial affairs student conduct site goes on their academic record. So we could write them and give them a ticket. They got to go pay $390 for an open container, for instance. Or we cite them to student judicial affairs, which is handled internally, and they go through that process internally. But then there's an academic, there's something on their academic record. So when they go to get a job, there's consequences. Well, tell us about this and tell us about that and tell us about this. We use judicial affairs as much as we use a city ticket. I prefer judicial affairs for the minor misdemeanor stuff I don't have to take action on. I have the discretion of, you know, giving a warning to or not giving a warning to. So I'll use judicial affairs most of the time. If it is egregious and there's, you know, theft involved or property damage involved or personal injury involved, of course I'm going to use the court system, because that's a more appropriate venue for it. But a lot of it is through our internal system. You know, they're there for an education. So that's kind of my mindset. Because I'm going to give them an education. They're going to learn how to be polite in society and be young leaders.
Oh, very cool.
Is my mic on now? Am I here?
Now
it is. You're back.
Jeez,
welcome
I had
back
to call
to Dynamic Coaching.
I know, welcome back. I know. I actually had to call. I don't know what happened. I mean, we were all working really fine until I started the music. And then I started talking, and I'm like, how come I don't hear Bob? How come I don't hear what's going on? I heard you, Hanchi. I heard Hanchi Dan, but then I couldn't hear Bob at all. And I'm like, what's going on?
Okay.
So okay, weird.
So now,
but
you,
I'm back.
Now you know my frustration the other last week with the music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my
Alpha
goodness.
Engineer.
Yeah.
You know, I have an engineer that's supposed to do all that stuff for me. I'm throwing things at the window. Like, what is going on in my show?
Oh, I was about ready to throw
things. How do I have an interview show with doing a monologue? This is not working for me.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, poor Bob. He's like, what are you doing? I'm going to have to, like, run this. So, like, I had to run and get another headset. That didn't work. So I know I think it is the board right now that's tripping out because I tried every headset I have over here. But, wow.
That's funny.
Pretty funny.
Funny. Well, I feel your pain.
Yeah. Hanchi, if you remember a couple weeks ago when I was on your show, I said my only technical difficulties are Sifu Rasita, and I was right.
That's right. I'm not going to argue with that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, since now we're all three back on the air. Sorry about that, folks. In fact, I was just on Facebook going, you know, hey, can someone actually click on the link and tell me if we're actually streaming? Because since my channel cut out, I'm hoping that the stream didn't cut out either. So I guess we'll find out when someone sees the message. But
okay,
since we're all three back on the air, Sifu Bob, did you want to go back and do shout outs and weird news and junk like that and then get back to the interview, or how do you want to do that?
Yeah, let's do that. I don't have any shout-outs this week, but I see you do.
Oh, okay. Cool. And for all this stuff that me and Sifu Bob are going to be doing, Hanchi, we'd like to invite you to be a kind of like a guest co-host for this part so you can make comments and stuff like that on all this stuff. So,
all right.
All right. So, listeners, in case anyone wants to call in and talk to Hanchi Dan Heck, our phone number here is 347-677-0667. I can't even talk. Okay. 347-677-0699. If you'd like to talk to Hanchi Dan Heck, the CEO of the Masters Hall of Fame, or if you have any shout outs or events, please give us a call. We even have our chat board up. So the chat board can be accessed through our Blog Talk Radio show marquee. So, okay, let's start with our shout outs. I just want to remind the Seattle contingent of the Seattle Snapdragons Bullwhip Study Group that tonight, we've got our Bullwhip meetup at the Seattle School of Acrobatics and New Circus Arts. So if you're a Seattleite or somewhere near Seattle and you want to learn how to use a bullwhip, we have our monthly classes every third Sunday of each month, which is why we're having our show right now instead of at 6 p.m. So give that a look up there on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. It's got all the information on how to get to the Seattle School of Acrobatics. So check that out. I also want to put a post out there to Elastic Steel. He put up another great video on our Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, and it's titled, quote unquote, "If Your Hips Hurt, You May Have Been Looking for a Solution in the Wrong Place All This Time. The cause is usually hidden in the opposite side of the body," this video explains. So, really cool video that explains why sometimes our hips hurt and why sometimes if our hips do hurt, stretching that same hip that hurts is probably not the best thing to do. So, go ahead and check out that video on the Dynamic Dojo page. And another great post by Master Rob Buckland, and it's titled Patriot's Blood. He's got a great blog, so go check that out and subscribe to it. And that link is also on our Facebook page. One more shout out. We've got World Tai Chi Qigong Day coming this coming Saturday, April 27th. And this event is in its 14th year. founded by Master Bill Douglas, a Yang style Tai Chi practitioner. I think he does Yang style Tai Chi. I'm going to have to double check on that. But he founded this event 14 years ago, specifically just to spread the word about the benefits of Tai Chi and Qigong and other types of healing arts. And what started out as just a small group that met out in a park has now gone worldwide. So every last Sunday of April, every year, since 14 years ago, at 10 a.m. worldwide local time, everyone gets together in Tai Chi groups and Qigong groups all around the world and practices Tai Chi for an hour. And the idea is to send a wave of energy, quote unquote, around the world at 10 a.m. Yeah, it's really cool, and I'm going to be holding my event at the Seattle Chinese Garden at 10 a.m. Pacific time here in Seattle. And all that information is at worldtaichiday.org. And all you have to do is look up Seattle events and my name, and you'll be able to get that information as to where it's at. Or you can just check out the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. So all the information is there. So, yay, pretty cool. And Bob has no shout-outs. Hanshi Dan, do you have any shout-outs or other than the Masters Hall of Fame, any other upcoming events coming up pretty soon?
Well, my shameless plugs, as I call them on my show, we have a couple things going on. Savant Young has Proving Ground 9 coming up May 9th. And if you can look up Savant Young and Proving Ground 9, he's on Facebook. And that's in Pasadena, where he's got the young up-and-coming MMA guys. It's a great event. They usually the house is usually packed. He's got like a 15,000 square foot facility, and he does just a great event. And then my good friend Jim Thomas is having his USA Hall of Fame on May 4th, the same day, which we support him. He supports us, type thing. So I'll be at that event. I can't be at Proving Grounds this year. But I'll be at Jim Thomas's event. You know what I like about Jim Thomas's event? I don't have to work it. I don't have to work it. It's a good event, good venue, all that kind of stuff. Jim Thomas does a great job, and I just get to go and enjoy myself and not have to work the event, answer questions, and run around like a banshee for 2 days straight. So it's a good
thing. That's
pretty
cool.
Those are my shout-outs.
That's pretty cool. Very I like the,
cool.
I like those events
really cool.
Where you don't have to think. You just go in there and enjoy.
I mean, it's like I'm a celebrity there. You know, people, hey, can I get your ad? Get your autograph, and can I get this? Can I get that? And I'm like, yeah, sure.
That's awesome.
What's that?
That's awesome. That's so awesome. Yeah.
So those are my shout-outs.
Right on.
Very cool.
Very cool. Well, let's go ahead and move on to health news. Now, this health news story we've got linked on our Dynamic Dojo page, so check that out. I'm going to try not to read all of it, but it's actually pretty interesting considering that I'm sitting here with a cup of tea. Now, this particular story is about tea drinkers, okay? Now, tea drinkers are great. In fact, I've got some Earl Grey with me right now. Tea drinkers who opt for black, oolong, green, or white teas may find that these beverages offer health benefits. Now, we've already known that green tea is really good for us because it carries certain types of antioxidants. But the April issue of the Mayo Health Clinic health letter covers what is and isn't known about the health effects of drinking tea. So pretty cool. Now, black oolong, green, or white teas have a common origin. Each is produced from the leaves of the Camellia sinensis bush. The leaves are loaded with flavonoids and other polyphenols that work as antioxidants, possibly lowering the risk of some diseases. Now, while numerous studies have found possible benefits, these actual benefits of drinking tea are not quite certain. Most research about tea's benefits is based on, number one, population studies and other types of studies. I can't even say this word. I'm trying to read it. Epidemiological. I don't even know what the hell that means. No, I think that has to do with population, if I remember correctly. I just can't say that damn word. Now, findings are limited, on this because factors other than tea consumption could influence these results. So, but this is what's known so far about tea's potential benefits. It's got cardiovascular benefits. It's uncertain if drinking tea over long periods might positively affect cholesterol levels, blood pressure, and atherosclerosis. Now, there's some early evidence that regularly drinking green tea, and that's what most people know about, green tea may reduce heart attack or atherosclerosis. I can't say anything medical today. What's going on? Now, there's conflicting evidence on black tea, though, and heart attack risk. So there's still a little bit of research going on with that for the cardiovascular benefits. Now, let's move on to cancer, if there's any benefits about cancer. Now, it's still unknown whether regular black tea consumption influences cancer rates. Early lab tests with white tea indicate that it may protect against colon cancer in particular. So far, well-designed studies haven't proven this either. Let's go one more. Memory. Studies are limited, but a recent one found that older adults in Japan who regularly drank green tea daily showed less memory difficulty compared with those who didn't drink tea regularly. Now, with all this, while there's so much to learn about tea's health benefits, the potential benefits seem to be in the cup. No pun intended. Not in tea supplements or tea extract capsules, because I've seen those around, you know, at the vitamin stores and stuff like that. And I'm like, you know, is that any better? Because sometimes I don't want to drink a whole cup of tea. But so far, there's no certainty that the compounds in supplements are the same ones in actual fluid tea, and even less certainty that these supplements might provide the same potential health benefits as tea. Now, this particular story, again, has a link on our Dynamic Dojo radio show, and it's got sublinks in it as well on the same page. So if you want to learn a little bit more about the benefits of tea, and that's all types of tea, go ahead and click on that link and check it out. Pretty cool stuff.
I've heard a lot of good stuff about the teas, and I'm actually considering tea is a natural part of my diet now because of all the health benefits that tea offer. I had no idea that green tea helped with free radicals and stopping cancer.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, my mother started drinking a lot of green tea, and especially Earl Grey, because back in 2007 she had half of a lung removed due to lung cancer.
Wow.
And it was the sucky kind because she had never smoked a day in her life, but she got it anyway. And when she learned about the cancer reducing benefits of green tea, she started drinking it a lot. And then a few months ago, she got really ill with fluid around the lungs because I guess a tumor had come back. But she started drinking a lot of bergamot tea after getting the fluid removed, and the doctor said, "Oh, you know, that fluid's going to come back." But she read about Earl Grey tea, specifically with the bergamot in it, how it kind of calms things down, controls the cough and stuff. And we just got back from a recent checkup, and the fluid hasn't come back at all.
Oh,
and the doctor's like, "What have you been doing?" You know, because that, you know, you should have fluid in your lungs again. And she's like, "Oh, just drinking tea and eating right." And the doctors can't figure out what's going on. And they're like, "Wait a minute, you know, they're supposed to, you know, this tumor is going to be producing fluid. Why isn't it?" And it's growing very slowly. You know, they were expecting to have to go in with targeted radiation therapy by now. And and it's not doing anything. So we're like, "Oh, hey, well, let's keep drinking the tea." So I'm drinking tea, too. So it's pretty cool stuff.
Good. I was really surprised at the – I said I was really surprised on the health benefits of just simple remedies like coffee and tea and – Yeah, I had no idea, none whatsoever.
Yeah, it's cool. Now, Bob, didn't I do a story like a few months ago about the benefits of coffee, or was that wine? I don't remember.
No, I think it may have been part of this. See, I'm waiting for the health benefits of vodka.
Health benefits of vodka.
I love it.
You don't have to worry about that, but it improves your eyesight. when you're between 18 and 22 in the bar, late at night.
About 2 o'clock, yeah.
Yeah, the vodka goggles.
Vodka goggles, yeah.
The vodka goggles, awesome.
Yeah. That
all right,
ugly
well,
thing is...
Yeah. That's right. All right, well, let's go ahead and move on to Bob.
Weird news.
All right, what do we got for weird news?
It doesn't get any weirder than this.
Okay.
Durex in Australia has released footage of a couple trialing their experimental, what they're calling, Fundaware.
Fundaware?
Fundaware. Which is built as a world's first, will allow you to transmit touch via internet through a phone app. Oh, my God, she found a chicken.
I'm just sitting here going, what the heck? Okay,
well,
so...
boldly stating that their new product is the future of foreplay, Durex Australia claimed that Fundaware allows you to transmit for touch to be transferred over the internet, deploying technology normally used to make a mobile phone vibrate. Actually, there's wires to use. Yeah.
Okay, Special Pro has a new form.
Oh, no!
Well, into the undergarments, they have actuators wired in and remotely stimulated but via smartphone app, according to videos uploaded by Durex. Apparently,
oh, my God. That's a good gag, Jeff. That'll go well. That will go well.
I was just to mess with my wife at work.
Stop touching me. Can you imagine the views you're going to get?
He's touching me. Now, how does this work? Does it say that?
All of a sudden, your drawer starts vibrating. Oops, not those ones aren't turned on yet.
I just saw that Fundaware has a Facebook page.
They do.
Oh my God, seem to share it.
Now, how does this? Does it say how it works?
No, but it says you can tease, tickle, and tantalize, even when apart. It's used for the people in long-distance relationships. Of course, maybe me, because I'd mess with somebody that's really close. How's that? That's for not making me dinner last night.
Yeah, can you imagine being at work wearing underwear? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I'm wearing my underwear. Oh, that goes with, that must go with the electric shock bra that I saw just
a
little.
Can you imagine a short and Fundaware? I don't think
yeah.
so.
Yeah. Well, I'm worried about the short in the electric bra that I saw the other day. I'm like, you know, if it's good, and it's supposed to deter rapists, right? But it's like, what really, you know, make sure that the wearer doesn't get like a 12,000-volt shock, you
wait,
know what I mean?
Shock bra, somebody grabs the breast and it lights them up?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know,
I thought,
what,
they were,
yeah,
I thought it was like a neon sign or something.
Like, don't rape me or I'll mess you up.
No.
Yeah, it's if there's a certain amount of pressure, either, you know, away from the body or on the body, then it'll give the attacker, quote unquote, this like huge jolt. But how do you hug somebody like that? You know,
it's a whole new world, I'm telling you.
Yeah, so Fundaware and shock bras. I gotta go check out the Facebook page.
Absolutely. Now this goes into weird laws. Now, Mississippi this week. There's only two weird laws in Mississippi.
Okay.
In one of the towns in Mississippi, a would-be groom must prove himself manly prior to marriage by hunting and killing either 6 blackbirds or 3 crows.
Well, that sucks.
Okay.
In
you know,
Tyler Town, it
now.
Is unlawful.
You
shoot. Never mind, I'm gonna forget that one. My cut tape hasn't worked, and I don't know what that word is, Rusty.
What? Okay, wait a minute. You took it the second one, right?
Right.
Oh. It says in Tylertown it is unlawful to save in the center of Main Street. What? Save what?
we know that's wrong. Let me look it up real quick. Let's see.
Okay.
Let's this again. Minnesota.
It's unlawful to save? Save what?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's illegal to shave in the center of Main Street.
Shave.
That's the name.
To shave. You can't, well, okay, so I guess if you're shaving down Main Street.
Depends on where you're
Oh, my goodness. Cool.
Bob, are you landscaping on Main Street?
Yeah.
That was funny.
Well, Mississippi only has two weird laws?
Only has two, yep.
That's ironic. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding, Mississippi natives. You know, that was kind of a joke to say that you guys should have more weird laws. But anyway. All right. Before we go to a short soft break, I want to do our trivia section of the week. And today, it's going to be a Did You Know, where I give three or more snippets of brain useless information. Or they might be useful, depending on how you look at it. So, anyhow, did you both know that there are more than 10,000 varieties of tomatoes? 10,000.
Wow.
That's crazy. I only know of four.
Are they round or green?
They're the tomatoes. Well, you know, from all these varieties, they come in like a bunch of different colors. Apparently, they're like, you know, green tomatoes, even when they're ripe, purple, you know, orange, brown, like blood red. I mean, there's like so many colors. And I guess this is counting varieties of heirloom tomatoes, so the ones that are shaped really weird and have really weird colors and stuff like that. So, yeah, kind of weird. So, yeah, it makes me want to look into tomatoes because I love tomatoes. All right, number two, did you know that in the early days of filmmaking, people who worked on the sets were actually called movies? The films back then were actually called motion pictures.
No, I did not know that.
I didn't know that either. And I know a whole bunch of actors and stunt people. I wonder if they knew that. That's kind of cool. I had no idea that it was actually the staff that were called movies, not the actual film. Weird.
You have spent way too much time memorizing those trivia cards.
Yeah. I do. I'm a trivia geek. It's kind of weird. All right. Speaking of movies, each year, this is number three, each year more movies are produced in India, where the moving image industry is referred to as Bollywood rather than Hollywood. Now, we all know that it's called, well, most of us know that it's called Bollywood, but I didn't know that many movies were produced in India each year. About 1,000 movies are released annually in India, twice the output of Hollywood. I mean, 1,000? Really? In a year? That's
India is about the size of Wisconsin, so.
Yeah, so that's a lot of movies. Now, a lot of these Bollywood movies, I've seen a few, and they're like freaking long, like 3 or more hours of dancing and singing with the main subject being love, you know, but they don't hardly focus on, you know, show kissing on screen. So, but it is a lot of, you know, musical, like Music Man type stuff. And every day, some 14 million Indian people queue in for a movie, with more than 4 billion movie tickets sold annually, compared to 3 billion
what?
For Halloween movies worldwide.
Wow,
that's crazy cool. I didn't know that either. That's pretty wild. All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and go to a soft break? We're just going to do a couple of commercials, and we'll get back to our interview with Hanchi Dan Heck. We'll be right back after this. Baby,
everybody. Jamie Lee Curtis here for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. What should you do to stop a friend from driving if they've been drinking? Answer, whatever it takes. Think before you drink. Designate before you celebrate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hello, everyone. Join Hunchy Daniel Hecht on Kickin' It Old School on KCAA 1050 AM on Tuesdays at 2 o'clock. He will bring you more great interviews with legends, leaders, and people that have made a difference in the martial arts and in people's lives. You can call in with questions or comments for our guests at 909-888-5222. So join Hunchy Daniel Hecht on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. here on KCAA 1050 AM, Kickin' It Old School. Hi, this is Eddie Morales from Kickin' It Old School on KCAA 1050 AM. I want to take this opportunity to invite you to the martial arts event of the year, the Masters Hall of Fame, on Saturday, June 22nd, 2013, at the Orange County Hilton, located in Costa Mesa, California. This year's theme is Women in the Martial Arts. Our guest speaker will be Lisa the Black Widow King. We will be honoring many legends in the martial arts. Join Dan and I from Kickin' It Old School at the Masters Hall of Fame, Saturday, June 22nd, 2013. Get your tickets now at MastersHallOfFame.org.
And now, on with the show.
All right, and we are back. This is the Dynamic Dojo Talk Radio Show with Rosita and Robert. We are joined with Hunchy Dan Hecht, the CEO of the Masters Hall of Fame. If you'd like to talk to Hunchy Dan, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. And if you call in, please note that if you want to actually talk live, please press 1 at any time when you call in. Otherwise, I'm just going to think that you're listening to the show. So, Sifu Bob, I think Soke Greg had called in while I was reading the health news and stuff like that. And but he didn't press 1, so I just kind of assumed that he would press 1 when he was ready to come on, but looks like he hung up. So it's okay, Greg, if you're listening, feel free to call on back. All right. So let's go ahead and pick up where we left off with our interview with Hunchy Dan Hecht. And Robert, I have no idea where you had left off when I had to call in.
Nice. Well, we're actually on number 6. Hanshi, tell us, when did you take over the Masters Hall of Fame, and what led up to your purchasing it or taking it over or what have you with that?
Oh, hey, we got Soke Greg back on the line, I think. Soke Greg, is that you? Hey.
Hey, Greg, how you doing? Hey, Hanshi, how you doing?
I'm doing good, sir, doing good. What are you doing out there in beautiful Chicago?
It's a beautiful day out here. I'm just trying to sneak in and listen to a great conversation today.
Well, I hope I can live up to you last week. Well, I tell you what, that was one heck of a radio interview.
Mm-hmm. That was awesome.
Coming from you, Hanshi, that is one heck of a compliment. Thank you.
So where were you on? Are we going to talk with Greg?
We're going to keep Soke Greg on the line here during your interview. And then anytime, Soke Greg, you can just ask questions and chime in and all that other kind of good stuff.
Okay.
All right. Cool.
Well, great. Bob, to answer your question, 2003, I was nominated and inducted into the Hall of Fame for outstanding contributions to the martial arts. And I immediately, kind of like you, became... thought it was a great organization, and Sifu Steve Spry, Grandmaster, Steve Spry, was doing a great job with the way the Masters turned out. And, you know, he kind of set the program up with him and his staff, and I just became an ambassador. Over the next couple of years, I inducted many great people, kind of the same way you did, and the system hasn't really changed. We nominate and induct, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was a period where Grandmaster Steve Spry said, you know, I want to do something else. And he is currently doing stuff with KI International, and he's training military folks and stuff like that, and doing a little bit of EP work and going to work in Blackwater, those things across the pond. And he didn't really want to do the Masters Hall of Fame anymore. I got the opportunity to take the organization over, and I actually just bought it from him. We agreed on a price, and one thing led to another. And that year, 2006, when they told us we weren't going to have an induction, I took it over in March of 2006, and we had our inductions in June. So we put everything together from March to June. That was one heck of a year, I can tell you that right now.
Wow.
And it was a year we had almost 100 denominations and 100 inductees, so it was pretty interesting.
So, wow, very cool.
Yeah, that's kind of the rundown of it. Now, Grandmaster Spry is still, you know, he's the guy that founded the Masters Hall of Fame with the help of Sifu Lynn Walker and Sensei Dai. They actually stayed on board when that moved over to me. We took it in a different direction, but they stayed on board up until recently. Lynn had to do some other things, and she became involved with securities and could not be a part of a nonprofit at that level anymore. So Lynn was replaced with Greg and a couple other people to backfill that leadership void. So hope that answered your question.
It did, but if you were to sum up the Masters in a paragraph, can you explain the Masters and the processes? And you worked on this all year, even though crunch time is like now. Sum it up in a paragraph about the Masters.
Well, that's a good question, Bob. What we do is we recognize excellence in the martial arts from all over the world. And, you know, when I got involved with the Masters Hall of Fame, it was mostly Southern California. And it was kind of, with no disrespect to Grandmaster Spry, but it was like a good old boys club. And people were inducted, the same people were inducted year after year after year. And we took it a different direction. Our thought process is, you know, once you're inducted into a Hall of Fame, you're inducted. You don't need another trophy to say that you're still inducted. So, you know, once inducted, now you're an alumni of the Masters Hall of Fame. So I took the organization from a dinner to what I consider the elite awards recognition for the martial artists in the United States at this time. And we have, and it's becoming international. We have, probably a half a dozen people coming from Europe this year. We got some people coming from South America. So I know this is going to be over a paragraph, but, you know, there's a lot to cover here.
Sure.
That the focus of the Masters Hall of Fame is to be the organization that recognizes excellence in the martial art. The people that, I mean, if you've ever been to our event, you see that we spare no expense, none at all, on the quality of the event, the awards presentation, and the awards themselves. You know, it's very important to me to give our inductees that experience, that 15 minutes of fame, stuff that they've, you know, they've worked a whole lifetime for in the martial arts for this award. I want them to have a great experience and to have something that they treasure sitting on their mantle.
Oh, beautiful. It is a great event. You know, and I think this is my fifth event this year, and I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed seeing it grow. My first one was when Silky Gray got inducted in 07, and it was on a smaller size than it is now. It was about 200 people at that point, and now it's grown into about 500 people last year.
And that's kind of what we want it. We don't want it to go much bigger because we will get more into uncontrollable. I mean, it's very difficult to maintain the room when you're doing awards because once people start drinking, start talking, everybody's there to socialize and have a good time. At the end of the event, people are talking and not paying attention to the inductions. And I think that is a disservice to those people to be inducted.
Yeah, you're right. Hey, Hush, you're absolutely right because it is a challenge trying to manage such a large group when everybody kind of gets free-flowing and talking and drinking and they're having a good time.
And well, I remember this year that you were our MC, and you had to really, really step in, and you you basically called people to attention. We are not moving forward until you shut up.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't that bad, but it the room was really, really loud. I think we had almost 500 people in that room that time. Greg, you did a great job
wow.
at controlling that room and getting through it. And that was at Disney,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Cool.
Yeah.
Greg, what was it, Disney that year when you were the MC?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
that
no
was
it wasn't Disney.
That was an event. That was a really, really good event. That's the year we had Don Wilson and Sheriff Stan Sniff as our guest speakers. We gave away a Harley. You know, it was a pretty substantial, and we, you know, partnered with Disney, of course, which is, you know, amazing in itself. So, did I tell you what we're doing next year? Did
no.
I tell anybody? Okay,
let's
that's going to be in the press release here shortly. You know, Long Beach International's their 50th year anniversary is next year. I got approached by Steve Cooper to partner with them again. Well, partner's the wrong word. Do our event in conjunction with. So we'll be in Long Beach again next year in conjunction
oh, cool.
with the 50th year anniversary of Long Beach International's. And it's our 15th
cool.
year anniversary. So, you know, this is a pretty huge event to be invited by such a historic martial arts tournament. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's a really good thing. Now, here's something else. And we may be doing, it's not maybe, we are going to be doing another event. I've been trying to find another venue to do it outside of California and move the Hall of Fame to other venues to give people that can't really afford to fly all the way in from wherever they're at to the Masters Hall of Fame that are worthy of induction. So we are going
mm-hmm.
to be doing an event in Texas. And
oh.
right now it's going to be either the Fort Worth area. That's the kind of area it's going to be. That's where we're going to be doing our event next year. And I don't know, but we may be doing it in conjunction with an icon. And I don't want to say it until we get it inked. But we'll be doing our event in conjunction with an icon's birthday, a martial arts icon's birthday. And he'll be, you know, it'll be the Masters Hall of Fame on Friday, his birthday on Saturday, or vice versa. So
cool.
It's going to be huge. It is going to be really, really huge. That should be, we should have 1,000 people at that event. And that was the thing, is that we can't go over 1,000. That was my instructions to the staff down in Texas. So, you know, we got to keep it under 1,000. So there's just, we don't have the infrastructure to handle anything over that. So it's going to be awesome next year. Next year is going to be a landmark year, kind of like Disney was for us for the Masters Hall of Fame. We're going to make our mark. In the martial arts community, there's a lot of media presence involved already. This year, we're having your radio show, my radio show. Wes is coming in. He's going to bring Look Live from, I think it's 104.7 out of Chicago. You'll probably listen to him, don't you, Greg? 104.7?
Yeah, every now and then. Yeah, every now and then.
Yeah, he's a dynamic martial artist. So he'll be here and doing his stuff. And then we got Robert Cardoza coming back, and he went from radio to TV, and he's got a TV show. So he'll be doing TV interviews
oh, cool.
at the Masters this year. So we've got a lot of great stuff going on this year at the Masters, and it's only getting better. The quality of the event continues to exceed my expectations. And if everybody knew, I mean, all of our staff is volunteer, all of it. Because I pour every dime into the awards and making sure that the event is top notch. So every dime that comes into the organization is put right back into the organization to ensure the quality of that meets the expectations of the martial artist. So I'm pretty excited about it.
Oh, very cool. But
yeah.
This year, I understand, and one thing you guys do is you listen when the food wasn't. What was expected, you
oh
listened, you changed that. But this year, I understand, other than I've always seen you put the money back into the event for future events and advertising and whatever, but this year, you're actually doing more than that. You're giving back. You're giving to charities. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we've done that for the last couple of years, but it's been kind of behind the scenes. We were doing scholarships for a while.
But I wasn't getting the amount of interest from the academic community. I mean, kids weren't writing the stuff. So I'd have three or four people apply for the scholarship, and that wasn't what I was looking for. I was looking to have more involvement within that community. I wasn't just looking to give money away. So I changed our focus to find charities that our ambassadors and our alumni were involved in. And Professor Bob White is one. He's a founding member of the Masters Hall of Fame. Or been around the martial arts community forever, and he does a tournament. And he started out with just doing a tournament for the Roy Family Kids Camp. And you know, Professor White went up to the Royal Family Kids Camp to do a demo. And the Royal Family Kids Camp, so to give a little background, they have one-on-one peer to, or I mean, counselor to abused child. So, and these kids are the worst abused children. I mean, they're really, really in their shelter or enclosed. I mean, they have some real trauma in their life. And the Royal Family Kids Camp does a great deal of good for these kids. And Bob went up and did a demonstration for them, fell in love with the concept of these kids, fell in love with the Royal Family Kids Camp. And so he started doing a tournament in honor of the Royal Family Kids Camp, and all the revenue went to them. And it takes about $500 to set a kid to camp. That's kind of the thing. So for every $500 they raise, they can send another kid to camp, and that was a good thing. So I don't know how long he's been doing it, but it's not been that long. It's been, you know, since I've known him. And they've raised nearly $500,000.
Wow.
And when I got involved with them, they were at 300. And I was like, you know, we can do more. The martial arts community can do more. And the first year I gave him a check for 500, and that was 2 years ago, 3 years ago now. We gave him a check for 500. Last year it was much more than that, and this year we're going to do the same thing. Now, Jamie Cashin out of Texas, he's an entrepreneur, does a lot of great stuff, and he has a orphanage. It's Spark Worldwide that he supports out of Africa, and he goes every year to this orphanage, and he takes karate down there and teaches these young kids karate while he's down there. And you know, we are going to, these are two signature charities right now, and we are going to give money to both of them this year based on our revenue streams. So in my opinion, the kicking and punching is great. The martial arts community is just awesome, and it's made me the man I am today, and I am defined by my martial arts experience. But what they're doing, they're helping others broader than themselves, or they're helping people that cannot help themselves, these kids that were abused as children that are really messed up in the head because of the trauma they underwent, are now being seen by professional counselors, and they're getting the help they need. And some of the stuff there was a Samantha, a video that Bob played. I think the girl's name is Samantha. And her story is just amazing. And she's a young woman now. I mean, she's a young woman talking about the Royal Family Kids Camp and what that one week meant to her. And I'm talking about it, I'm getting goosebumps. That's the dynamic difference. And what we can do as martial artists, if we can come together as a community to impact an incident like Bob did, Professor Bob White. Bob White travels the world. They opened up a Royal Family Kids Camp in Costa Rica. They went to Ireland, and they've got a network of Kempelists over in Ireland that donate money. This year they raised over $100,000. I'm amazed at the level of compassion from that guy, and I need to be a part of that kind of stuff. So that's why the Masters Hall of Fame supports Professor White, and he's one of our ambassadors also, and he just does great things.
Well, you know, guys, I think you can all understand why the Masters Hall of Fame is doing as well as it is under the headship of Hanshi Het. You know, mm-hmm. One thing about you, Hanshi, is that you've always been a visionary about where the hall can reach. And right. You've always been a visionary as to what our scope as martial artists is to be. It's not just a punch and kick. It is to truly touch the lives of the people around us. And mm-hmm. So you want to try to get other martial artists to understand what it means to think outside of their own bubble. But sometimes, as people, you know, we get caught up in our lives, and we tend to forget that we live in a community. And, you know, the quality of that community is dictated by the compassion and the outreach of those that make up that community. So, you know, to be able to step in where Hashi has with the Masters Hall of Fame and to truly bring that sense of community to it, it brings a sense of outreach and tangibility to everybody to also think that no matter what art you're in, are you maximizing who and what you are? Are you espousing your art and the value proposition of your art as thoroughly as you can? And a lot of people just don't know how to do it. And I think the Masters Hall of Fame is just one of those organizations, one of those few, that really helps all of the participants, whether you're an inductee or alumni or you are a spectator with friends and family. It keeps us all mindful that we should always be striving to reaching to be better, to be making more of an impact, to be touching the lives of others. And I think that's the quality of the martial art. That's why, you know, people talk about the sports side of things today, and that's just sports stuff. That's not martial. And this is the martial way, that something goes far deeper than the punching and the kicking.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things that Greg touched on, you know, when martial artists start a sentence with "I did" instead of "we did," there's a problem. There's just a problem. They lost what it meant to be. And not for some. You know, for some of those folks, that's what they wanted. Okay, and I get that. And if that's what they want, that's what they can have. Excuse me. But when you start a sentence with "we did this," it is much stronger than "I did this."
Mm-hmm.
The collaborative leadership style, and I'm a collaborative leader. I am not an authoritarian leader. It's not my way or the highway. I listen to my board. I listen to the people that attend. I get feedback from everybody, and I make adjustments based on that feedback because it is a we thing, not an I thing. I tell you, you know, here's my I thing. This is a very difficult thing for me to do. I mean, I'm not a millionaire, and I work for a living, and I have a lot of things that go on in my life. As you guys know, I'm in school getting a doctorate. I have young kids. My daughter's a grad student. My wife's getting ready to go to law school. I also have a radio show, and I work full time. So the Masters Hall of Fame could be a full time gig if we made it that way, and it's my passion, and that's why I think it's important, and I carve out a section of time for the Masters Hall of Fame because I believe it's that important. I believe it'll be the, as long as we continue what we're doing, it'll be the foundation of greatness within the martial arts community. People will go back to 15, 20 years from now. This organization really did, they had its act together. These people really knew what it meant to be a martial artist, and these are legends in the martial arts community, unsung heroes. You know, there's a lot of people out there that we know through TV and through theater, and you know, but there's a lot of people that are doing great things that we don't know, like Bob White. No one would know Bob White from TV. While he was on Karate Kid, he was a center referee for Karate Kid, but you know, you wouldn't know him from that. Right, but the stuff that he's doing, the maturity of that, of his wisdom, is just amazing to me. And those are the kind of guys that I think that the Masters Hall of Fame, and not just me, but the board thinks the Masters Hall of Fame should recognize. And that's what empowers this organization to move forward. So I'm pretty happy with the level of leadership we have on this organization. And we always, it is a good thing about this, is every year, every single year, guess what happens? We induct another brilliant mind in the martial arts, many that want to be a part of the Masters Hall of Fame, much like everybody on this call right now, on this this conversation. Rashida, you became involved, a couple years ago? Bob?
As of this year, yeah.
Yeah.
I got inducted in 2011, but as of this year, I actually actively got involved, yeah.
You came back year after year? You know,
yep.
I mean, well, 11, 12, and then this year. But that's a standard. I mean, we get a lot of people saying, hey, what can I do to help? And that, to me, is a testament to what we're doing at the Masters Hall of Fame. What can I do to help? Can I help you in any way? How can I make this better for you? What can I do? That, to me, that just tells me we're doing the great things. So I get invitations to do an event in another state every single year. The difference is that this year, the next year, the person that's going to do the event has his own staff in that state, so I don't have to fly back and forth. So, and that kind of was, that's what pulled the trigger. We've been talking about doing it for a while. We even talked about doing it with Greg in Chicago, but Greg was doing his sabbatical. I'm still jealous of that, by the way, where he got to bounce around different countries and train all over the world. So. Yeah. Maybe we'll do you next, Greg. Is that okay?
Hey, I'm interested, yes.
I know you are. So.
Awesome. Well, Hashi, with this, I want to dispel some rumors as well. So we're going to get on to some questions, and I'm going to mention some things. It's funny that you mentioned that you want to, you know, we want to get involved. You know, it's not just you. It's a lot of people involved. You and I received an email the other day where the way the email was written, I would have sworn, anybody read it would have sworn you and I were partners in the Masters because my name is in the forefront.
Well, it's because of your leadership, Bob. I mean, I want you to think about your leadership style, and when you commit to something or something, you give it everything. So, you know, the person, and what Bob's talking about is we got an email from an ambassador and that had some health issues and couldn't take part the last couple of years because he had some significant issues. And he thought that I was mad at him. He thought we were mad at him. And, you know, life happens. I know that. And, I mean, the guy's a good friend of mine. And he wrote the email to both Bob and I. And it's because Bob is out there fighting. Bob, Sifu Bob here does our Facebook page. He does the Masters Hall of Fame. He's involved in that communication out to the masses. And, you know, he's a vital component of the success of the Masters Hall of Fame. So, you know, to me, that shows a sign of success of the organization because in other organizations, not to throw stones, but it's all about the person holding the show.
Right.
Here, it was me, it was both of us because they know who I am, but Bob's out in the forefront pushing the communications out. So they thought he was a part owner in the organization, or they respected him enough to include him in the email. To me, that's a component of success of what we're doing when you can't really tell who's running the organization because we are running the organization as a group, as a collaborative leadership style. I don't do it by myself. I do it with the help of many, many, many people. So, I meant to talk to you earlier about that, and thank you for the stuff that you are doing for the Masters Hall of Fame and what you do in the martial arts community. This radio show is another great example. We have a couple of them out there now that are really good martial arts radio shows, and the growth will continue. You know, 5 years ago, have you ever heard of a martial arts radio show? Or even 3 years ago, for that matter.
No.
Now I know four.
No, there was only one that I knew of that Dr. Kelly Warden did out here in Tacoma, Washington, but that only came on like once every 2 weeks or something like that. And that was it. That was all I knew about. That reminds me, I need to get a hold of him. But that was it. And even then, I don't think he does it anymore. So it's we're now lucky to have like all these internet podcasting and blog talk radio type stuff out there. So that way, you know, all of us, all over the world as martial artists can spread the word about our arts and share with each other and become a community.
Right.
I think, it's about the we. Now, Soke, Greg, was it your saying or somebody else that was, it went something like, you know, when it comes to community, there are no big eyes and little youths. Was that you?
No, that was you.
Else.
It certainly sounds like something I'd like to hear.
Yeah, there are no big guys. When spelling community, there are no big guys and little U's.
Right.
I thought that was really cool. And I thought that was you, because,
It's not right if I steal that, though. I'll steal that one if it's okay.
I don't know. I'm trying to remember who to credit for that.
the better thing was I'll use that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Not the top of the other line, you know.
Yeah.
And a professor that cites people for plagiarism all the time. That's funny stuff.
That's awesome.
Well, mm-hmm. Anshie, you know, I nominated and inducted Sifu Rusty in 2011, and now she's ambassador. So we're both ambassadors in this organization. Mm-hmm. Tell us the role of the ambassador. What do the ambassadors do?
Oh, my gosh. The ambassadors really are the heart and soul of the Masters Hall of Fame, and I truly mean that. There's no way that this event would ever happen with the executive leadership doing it, let alone at their own devices. You know, I mean, it just wouldn't happen. The mm-hmm. ambassadors are the eyes and ears, the heart and soul of the organization. They reach out to the community and nominate and vet each inductee. So when I get a nomination package from the ambassadors, I know that each person has the proper qualifications, has done the appropriate things in the martial arts to be recognized. If I had to do all that myself, there's just no way. This year, you know, we changed the direction a little bit. We were starting to grow at a pace that I couldn't sustain, so I had to change the organization a little bit, make it a little bit smaller, just because the growth was going so fast I couldn't sustain it. So we made some changes, and even this year we have 100. I tried to do it last year, and it didn't work. So this year we had 125, I think, nominations. Last year
wow.
we had well over 250. And, you know, last year I tried to pare down our nominations. And, you know, it's hard to tell the ambassadors, hey, look, don't nominate as many people. So it just is because I only want X amount. Because now it puts them in a bad position where they nominate, you know, a grandmaster from this system but not another system. And there's a political fight, and we're not a political organization. So I have to avoid that concept. So instead of talking to the ambassadors about limiting their nominations, I limited the ambassadors. I'm putting them on a track where we have fewer ambassadors. That brings in less nominations, which gives me a more controllable event where we're not there all night, you know, canning out awards. It's more about the social time. But mm-hmm. your role as an ambassador is to reach out in that community and touch martial artists from around the world. And we have a great crew of ambassadors, just a phenomenal crew of ambassadors. And this role is more defined every year. There's more things. Like, you know, who knew that Bob Uda came in and worked with Sophie Gregg to develop that network, the Alumni Relations Network, where we reach out to the alumni and talk to alumni on a regular basis. Through this radio show, through my radio show, you know, who knew that was going to happen? It just happened, and we tied it together. So, you know, those mm-hmm. are that collaborative piece that makes the Masters Hall of Fame so great.
Well, you know, Hanshi, it's interesting. I had an opportunity through a lot of years to work with Sifu Bob, doing DVDs and magazine layouts, and you know, we trained together for a lot of years. And you know, but that, you know, that is how Sifu Bob is. He is just, you know, he gets his teeth around something and he just won't let it go, and he will take care of the details, the minutiae. He will follow up consistently on the things that many of us are just challenged to kind of keep up with sometimes. And Bob just does it as a matter of fact. It's just kind of how his nature is. And, you know, and it made a really great martial brotherhood between him and I for a lot of years. And because it was a compliment. I was one way in some ways, he was another way in other ways, and you bring that together for big projects of any kind, and you're going to find you just don't miss anything. Everything gets covered. And especially, you know, Hans, you know, when it's kind of your, you know, your type of personality, or when you're up in front, or you know, if I was doing the DVDs, or I'm running seminars, or, you know, I'm running so fast that it's hard to sometimes slow down and cover all the minor details that keep me on track. And when you get Sifu Bob on your team, because he understands everything that has to be done, but he also understands, he knew me. He could read when I'm in flow, you know, he prefaced and prepped everything to keep me in flow. And that is an art form. Let me tell you, if I had all the seminars I've done and all the DVDs I've done and other with other issues and all the different type of kind of broad, big teaching environments, it's hard to find somebody that can play that role because they have to understand in depth what the subject is. And they have to know you well enough to know that they're anticipating you. They know that you're gonna run along here, so they're gonna nudge you back. They're kind of like a horse. But you're kind of pulling back on the reins, but you're still letting that horse run. And I think that's that sometimes my job and your job. My job is to run, get on the track and run. I'm there to sprint, okay? And I'm best sprinting. Let me run. All the other issues are necessary, but sometimes when you're in that sprinting mindset, you're not covering all the other issues like you need.
Uh-huh.
So having a Sifu Bob and that type of personality who could just as easily be out there sprinting on the track with you, but you know he understands each aspect and knows how to kind of keep you centered and steered. So yeah, I've always had a lot of props for Sifu Bob. That's why, you know, I gave him he got his 6th degree black a couple years back, and which is a big rank. But he earned it. You know, he earned every aspect of that. And these are the talents of why, you know, a certain master brings certain qualities and his own talents and his own abilities to the art. And it's everybody bringing their piece of the puzzle that makes the whole. And I think that's the real beauty of relationship, the we, not the I.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Both Bob and Rashida are doing a phenomenal job this year in developing that understanding of the Masters Hall of Fame, what it means to be an ambassador. And if I could cookie cut, you know, this understanding and give it to other people, it's great. I'm a fire and forget guy. I need to say, here, go handle this. And at the end of the day, you walk back with a package that's completed, and I say, thank you. Because I don't have the time to do it all myself, and I don't have the time to give direction. And if I had the time to do that, I could do it myself. That was kind of the impact of having such great martial artists as ambassadors. Like, both Bob and Rashida could probably run their own organization if they wanted to because of the attention to detail and their leadership capabilities. But yet I find them humbly and graciously serving at the Masters, and you know I'm just honored by it, as well as all the other ambassadors that are involved. We have some great.
Well, Hashi, you're one of just. I'm being humble about you. You're probably one of the finest leaders I've ever met, and because you don't micromanage and you expect your professionals to do their professional thing, and you encourage people to be the best they can be. And when people are running into issues, you support them, you help them.
Yeah.
You support by positive reinforcement, not negative. And,
right.
You know, because martial artists can be very temperamental, you know, and especially the warriors.
That's a funny way to say that.
Yeah, really, yeah. And that's just everybody listening, right, that we can be a little bit temperamental.
True.
You know, martial artists, you know, they have a default. Okay, politics didn't work. Okay, let's talk about this in a different way. That's a square peg. This is a round hole. You're going to go in it. I just want to let you know that right now.
That's hilarious.
That is hilarious.
I have to step off. I have a class. I've got to go teach in 5 minutes. Oh. And so I'm sitting in the parking lot enjoying the show. I just want to say one thing is that just as one of the alumni and family to the Masters Hall of Fame, it absolutely has shaped me in ways that has nothing to do with getting an award. It had to do with Hashi Hecht, Grandmaster David Dye, certain fabulous people who dealt with a knucklehead warrior like me who went through some warrior things and not only knew and how to help me, but supported me every step of the way. And let me tell you, being a part of that kind of family and being in the Hall of Fame and being a part of that alumni, it's a life-changing experience. And that's what I want to, from my parting words to everybody, is that if you are, if you're interested in becoming an alumni to the Hall of Fame, this isn't just some organization. This is a family of friends and brothers and sisters who stand by each other, support each other through the good and through the bad, and that's very rare in this life, as well as helping us move to our next levels in the martial arts when we're at those sticking points. So I just think that I'm humbled to be part of the alumni. I'm humbled to know, you know, Master Vestita and Master Bob and Hanshi Hecht. But Dan, if you continue to have the impact on others that you had on me, brother, there's nothing in this world that you're not going to achieve. And I love you to death. I love the Hall. And I think you just have a fabulous team put together that you're going to do some really great things. Everybody,
well,
I love you all, and I'm going to run.
I definitely want you to take a more active role in that. I've got, you know, people are coming at me a mile a minute, and you know, last year, because when you're down to the wire, you only attack what's in front of you. Okay, the last couple weeks of the Masters Hall of Fame, all the promises that I made, I don't know them because they're, you know, I made them 2 months ago, and now I've got fire after fire after fire to put out. And, you know, I take time off work for the Masters Hall of Fame so I can put out those fires. So I only attack what's in front of me. And last year I promised some things I didn't deliver to some very good friends. And I learned from that. I learned that I need to have other people doing things, and that's why I asked you about making sure the people that I promise seminars have seminars, you know. I want you to run my seminar program for me. And, yeah, so I definitely would like you guys to step up in more of a facilitator role with the Masters Hall of Fame. I've got to find a balance. I literally ran on Saturday. I got up and I was down in the seminar room. I think we started seminars at 7:30. And I was doing seminars, radio interviews. I mean, every minute had a name, right? And I went up and jumped in a shower and took a shower, came back down and was on another radio interview, and I'm still sweating. It looked like that I just got done working out. And so if you look at some of those media clips, you go, what the heck was going on with that? You know, what was going on with Danny? He looked a little ragged there. So this year, I learned from that. This year, I'm going to not try to do so much myself, and give other people that want those responsibilities. It's not like I'm saying, hey, I need you to do this, and you know, take it away from what you normally would be doing. You've expressed interest in being more involved and being more involved with leadership, and that's the reason that, you know, if I don't have to be there at 7:30, I can be doing something else with Sensei Dai, because Sensei Dai runs all of operations and he's doing it by himself. He's got a staff too, but he has his staff that's running operations. And, you know, we literally tie up at the Masters Hall of Fame, and I depend on him to get his job done. He depends on me to get my job done. And, you know, if there's a hiccup there, I can't help him, and vice versa, because we had a hiccup and I'm looking for him for support, but he's got, I mean, the operations side, getting the trophy set up, getting that room ready, getting, you know, the entertainment set up, that's a nightmare. I mean, that's a real nightmare by itself. So what we're doing now is we're bringing others in that show the capacity and interest of supporting the masters in those roles. I'll give you an example of what we're looking for consistency. A couple years back, I had a sponsor that come up and said, we want to sponsor the inductions of all the people being inducted this year. We want to cover their expenses. And it was a gracious donation, but I could not justify accepting that donation when I couldn't provide that level of service the next year. They wouldn't commit to a 5-year donation. They were going to give me $25,000 1 year. And I, you know, although the Masters Hall of Fame could have used that money,
I could not say, okay, next year we can do the same thing. Next year we can do the same thing. The following year we could do the same thing. So I couldn't accept that money because I couldn't guarantee that my event would grow in status each year. I can't go backwards. I got to go forwards, right? So
right.
When we look for ambassadors, we look for those characteristics. And it's not that an ambassador comes up and says, hey, I want to do A, B, and C. I don't give them that immediately. I give them smaller rules to see if they fulfill those rules. And, you know, I'll put an example like the church. If you go to your minister at church and say, hey, I want to lead the ministry, the children's ministry. Well, you're not going to lead the children's ministry when you just join the church. They're going to give you small supporting roles to see if you can do that. You'll become a deacon. You'll have other leadership roles so the pastor knows that he can count on you day in and day out to do what you need to do. And that's kind of the same philosophy I use for the Masters Hall of Fame. And both Reseda and Bob in the few years Reseda's been involved, you've been involved with it. You've done phenomenal stuff. And Bob, not just with my organization, but with other organizations you're involved with, you know, you've been in the forefront of the leadership capability. So as the Masters develop, the Masters Hall of Fame develops, I give those people more responsibility because they want it and they can handle it. So that's kind of a long-winded answer. But that's why you got those positions. And I'd love to have you take that part of the Masters off my plate and make sure it's done and done appropriately.
Oh, very cool. That's done then. Of course, I wanted a commitment from you, and now I've got it in front of a whole bunch of witnesses.
Right.
We've got a bunch
of people that already are scheduled for seminars. I haven't put a structure in place. We don't have the literature out yet. I don't have any artwork done. I don't have any posters done. But all that stuff's got to get done. And, we'll talk offline and on kind of where my head's at and the direction. Cause we're going to put this list of seminars out, and it's going to be a page on the website. And, it'll be artwork done and some posters developed, and they'll be sent out to different dojos and that kind of stuff. So it's a big job. It's a lot of responsibility, and I appreciate you stepping up.
Not a problem. Now, in your experience, because I know my experience and Sifu's experience, what is when somebody's nominated for the Masters, what is the biggest resistance that you've had in the past with them maybe not accepting the nomination? And I'm going in a direction, so I'm feeding you there.
Yeah, that's a good question. The misunderstanding of what we do. There's a lot of organizations out there that, and this is no disrespect to them because they serve a purpose, but they're a pay-for-fame organization. Uh-huh. So if you're inducted, now they may be quality inductees and have a lot of experiences, but, there's a nomination price. There's an induction price. And there's some of them that are $300, $400, $500 where you are paying for the privilege of being inducted into the Hall of Fame, to their Hall of Fame, not ours. In the Masters Hall of Fame, we have a different tact. As you know, the trophies there's a cost, there's a significant cost to the tangible asset of the Masters Hall of Fame that you get as an inductee. But all you're paying for is your dinner. It's all you're paying for. You pay the same price as the person sitting next to you, your wife or your husband or your guest, whoever you're bringing. You pay the same exact price. So we're not charging for the privilege of being inducted into the Masters Hall of Fame. There's some people that think that they're being inducted and being honored, so I should pay for their airfare, their hotel room, their nomination, mm-hmm. all the tangibles that go along with it. And, in a perfect world, that would be great. But we don't have that kind of sponsorship that I can guarantee, such as the one I talked about that wanted to give me $25,000 to pay for those things. But if I offer it one year, I got to offer it the next. So mainstream sponsors come on board, like Budweiser or Pepsi or somebody like that comes on and says, we like what you're doing, and we would like to be more involved, but here's a check, right? I can't offer that, nor will I. I hope I answered that question, but that's the biggest resentment I get is, the people I talk to, they feel like that they should be have more of a, they feel like they should be catered more, like there should be a movie star and, you know, people pay them to come. And we just don't have the budget to do that.
Exactly.
So that
was one of my resistances. I had one where I don't, you know, I don't pay you to be inducted into anything. Well, you're not. You're paying for dinner. I inducted the same time I inducted Cecil Rusty. I inducted Frank Duke. You don't get any bigger and any nicer than that man.
And he Frank, said, you know, Frank paid for his dinner. You know,
absolutely.
You know, I'll tell you, yeah, we had some big names. Big names come to the Masters Hall of Fame. Randy Couture, John McCarthy, Dana White, all these guys. You know, they wrote a check for $150 for their dinner. It's not a big deal. It's not a slight on them because they came to an organization. You're paying for a dinner. You're not paying for induction. So, again, it's just a perception. And, you know, some of the perceptions, and I get it, the movie stars out there that make their living by appearances, they're in a different classification. Because that's how they make their income and how they provide for the family is they do appearances. Now, I don't pay for appearance fees. I just don't. But if you're a guest speaker or, you know, I will pay your expenses to come as a guest speaker. Like all my guest speakers, I pay for their expenses because it's important to me to make sure that they're treated well. And, you know, it's just the right thing to do. But I can't do that for every single inductee. If we did, we'd have, you know, four or five inductees. Well, we couldn't do it because we couldn't fill the room. I mean, there would be 20 people in the room, and I'd go broke. So and that's not an option, you know. So, a lot of it, until the media gets on board and says, wow, this is a good event. And, you know, we're about there. I really think within the next 5 years, we're getting closer and closer to being on a San Diego station, a TV station. That station's still in the works. There was some difficulties with San Diego, but we were supposed to have a Masters Hall of Fame CD for this last year that was filmed, as everybody knows, and they were going to play it in San Diego on a TV station in San Diego, an HD station. But there's some problems with that HD station. It's not gone away. That it's still a part of the Masters Hall of Fame package, but I can't control that station's technical difficulties. Neither, just like I can't control my technical difficulties on the radio or yours today. So when things happen, that we just have to flow with them and wait until it happens. But this year, we have a Robert Cardoza Live from On the Street with Robert Cardoza coming down to do interviews with our inductees and at the Masters Hall of Fame this year. So the Masters Hall of Fame is starting to hit mainstream media through radio and TV. And, you know, it'll be a time in the near future where we'll be on like a Spike TV channel where we'll have a 30-minute segment on the Masters. It won't be the whole thing, but it'll be a 30-minute, you know, highlights of the Masters Hall of Fame on a station in San Diego or on a station like Spike TV or something like that. That's coming. How we get there is still yet to be defined, but that'll come. And when we do that, that changes the game. That truly changes the game for the people that say, oh, maybe I do want to go to that. I mean, does anybody complain about spending $250 to go to the Oscars if they get an invitation to go? No, they don't. So, and it's probably more than that. I've never been invited to the Oscars, so I don't know how much it is. But there's a cost involved, and it's more so for the operation, the dinner itself. That's what we do. We discharge for the dinner. So I kind of took a long way around to get the answer, but I hope it kind of dispelled some of those rumors about paying for fame.
Well, and that's what I wanted to get, because that was the biggest resistance I got was I don't pay for an induction, but you're just paying for dinner, and anybody who thinks that you're getting rich off the Masters is out of their mind.
You want to talk to my wife about that? My wife
is told me no more.
My wife says that you're $20,000 in the hole the other way. You know, I don't mind you doing this, but stop. You know, I want a pool, okay? So stop. So I can't spend any more money on the Masters till I give her a pool here at the house.
And of course, I'd like to get her on the line and discuss how many times she had those divorce papers in front of her. And honestly, Hanshi, I've got inductees from the past, the Bad Sisters, Michael Rivera. They're coming this year. They're not getting, yeah. I mean, they've got family members now getting inducted, but Michael Rivera said, I'm coming. The Bad Sisters, this is going to be their event every year they're going to, because it's a great
yeah.
event.
That's
I got
what we're
tears.
Going with this. Huh. This absolutely. You know, that's, if we're going to hit 1,000 spectators, you know, it's not going to be from family, you know, of guests.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be from the people that said, this is a great event, and I want to be there every year.
Right, right.
As long as I don't have another event like I had in Anaheim, that will continue to grow. that was no fault of anybody at the Masters Hall of Fame. That was beyond Convention Center. The organization that they moved our, it was just a lot of things that fell short. You know, the room that we agreed on, and there was a break in a pipe in the wall broke, and they moved us to, instead of giving us a comparable room, they moved us into a dingy room, which was terrible, and the food was just, it's not
awful.
It was bad. I mean, I wouldn't have fed that to anybody. You know, and I flew in my parents, I flew in my mother, my brother-in-law, my sister, and you know, I had, you know, people that, besides the ambassadors, this was my signature event. I'm bringing in people. I'm trying to wine and dine. My brother-in-law is executive with the company. I was trying to get his company to sponsor the Masters. I didn't even talk to him about it because the event was so bad. I was like, oh, the event, the Masters side of the event went flawlessly, but the food and the venue was far from my expectations, far from anybody's expectations, and I truly thought it was going to have a much worse effect on me than it did. On the Masters Hall of Fame, and that goes to, and I think everybody in the alumni that have been involved with us, and the ambassadors and the inductees understood that that wasn't a Masters Hall of Fame structural problem. That was a problem that happened with the hotel and their expectations of service to us. So, yeah, Aramark ended up cutting me a significant check afterwards because I screamed to high heaven. It was a pretty bad thing, but the damage was done as far as the food was concerned. The food last year, I think, made up for it. So, you tell me, was last year's food
good? It did.
The entertainment was good. Is that good? We're going to change the entertainment this year. We're not going to have anything in the center or in the middle when we do dinner. We're just going to let people get up and talk and do things. We're not going to have entertainment because it was one of the complaints I got is, you know, they're there to socialize and, you know, every minute is orchestrated, and people at the table, they can't talk because they're being respectful for the speaker or the person getting inducted or the entertainment because they're watching. There was really no interaction time. So a couple things we're doing to change that this year is Friday night we're having they have a bar at the hotel. It's a nice bar, and that's going to be our we're going to have a Friday night get-together, and we're going to have it at that bar. It's going to be a casual event where everybody just comes in, and we're going to socialize Friday night. It's going to be kind of a VIP party in the beginning, and then we're going to open up to everybody. And Saturday, we'll do the seminars like we normally do, and Saturday night we'll have the event. But there's going to be a lot of free time where do the seminars and the breakout sessions that people get that interaction with people they haven't seen in years. Greg's in Chicago. I see him at the Masters. I like to spend time with Greg because he's a dynamic guy, and you know he has great insight into the martial arts community. I love to spend time with him, and as a brother, martial arts brother, and same with you and Rosita. You know, even though we're close in Southern California, we see each other at events. We don't see each other socially because we're geographically separated by you know, cities and stuff. So. That's what I'm trying to push that Masters Hall of Fame to do, is to make this not just an event for award recognition, but almost a conference. You know, and have that conference feel where there's breakout sessions, there's seminars, there's workshops, there's how, like, you know, we could talk about blog radio, for instance, how people, I would love to have 20 or 30 Hall of Famers out there with their own blog radio show. Like you guys, this would be great. Can you imagine having 30
yeah.
40 different shows out there around the United States talking about martial arts? That'd be huge.
Yeah.
That would be huge.
That would be huge.
So,
and you know, you guys are the front runner on Blog Talk Radio. You know, you guys could do seminars and workshops on that. I just thought of that just now. So those are the kind of things
wow.
I would like
great
to.
Great idea.
Yeah, it is great. How would you like to host your own radio show? This is how we do it. You know, this
mm-hmm.
is, you can have a radio show. I mean, we've got Alan Woodman that does a daily show now.
Yeah,
back east. So, I mean, he's not one of our inductees. We, as of yet, he hasn't formally been inducted into our organization. It's just because of location. He can't get out here when we're doing it. This year, I think
mm-hmm.
he's coming. So
good.
If he comes, we'd love to. He'll probably, I'll put a Look Live booth up for him, and we'll have a media section for the Masters Hall of Fame between radio, TV. David Commentary is going to kill me. You know, he's our PR guy. He's just going to kill me because I just keep adding more stuff to his plate.
Well, did you hear about Shihan Woodman's Mace event, the Martial Arts Communications Expo?
No, I did not. Where is that going
to
be?
I'm going to have to send you the information because it would be great if you and Dave Kamatoy could come out. And it's going to be in Washington, D.C. in September. And the whole premise behind the event is getting together, you know, everyone from magazines, TV, radio, internet radio,
uh-huh.
the whole nine yards, together for a big expo. He and some other people have been working pretty hard at getting people out there to sell their wares, seminars, you know, that kind of thing.
Kind of like a dragon
but
fest, the old dragon
kind
fest.
Of, yeah. It's kind of like a
okay.
dragon fest. And he wants to put together like a, you know, 1 million martial artists march right there in the near the Washington Monument or whatever.
That'd be great.
So it's going to be in September. I'll send you the information on that after
that'd be,
the show.
That'd be huge. I'd love to do something like that.
Yeah, it'll be cool.
Something like that.
Yeah,
cool. Let's get back to the seminars. Now, are we going to do one room this year and from 7:30 until 4?
It just depends on the seminar. You know, all that stuff's up in the air. I got to get over to Lynn at the Hilton and say this is what we need. You know, she gives us whatever we need over there. So
mm-hmm.
shout out to the Orange County Hilton. Boy, I tell you what, I love those people. They have been so great. We outgrew them with the year we went to Disney the first time. So the venue got so big that year that we had to move outside of the Orange County Hilton. They've done some revamping to their ballrooms in the back where they combined two ballrooms, which opened it up for us again. So we went back to them after we left Disney 2 years ago. So, I should rephrase that. We didn't leave Disney. Disney changed their – they're not doing the Disney Martial Arts Festival, and that's the reason we were there is because of the Disney Martial Arts Festival, and we were
mm-hmm.
doing our event in conjunction with them. So they didn't do the Disney Martial Arts Festival anymore, and there was no real need for us to go to Disney if it wasn't a Disney Martial Arts Festival when the Orange County Hilton loves us and treats us with, you know, utmost courtesy. And, I mean, I can't tell you how well they treat us. I just can't. So they did some reorg down there, and we're back with them, and I'm truly happy about that. So if we need two rooms, we can have two rooms to answer your question, Bob.
Very cool, very cool. Now, I want to point out to everybody listening and everybody that listens on Archive is that when you pay $150 for the dinner, that includes everything. That includes
mm-hmm.
all the seminars. All the seminars
yes.
are included, which they didn't used to be at one time. But
right.
And
I'm glad you brought that up. I stopped charging for the seminars simply because I didn't want to look like we were nickel and diming our people.
Right.
But,
right.
And then all of our seminar people are doing this as a way to support the Masters Hall of Fame. I'm not paying the people doing seminars. So there's really no need for me to charge for them if I'm not paying them. And so that's the reason we stopped charging. We were charging, what, $75 to $100 for the seminars,
mm-hmm.
and you get to go to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when I started talking to the the people doing the seminars, they said, you know, the very first year, out of all the people that did seminars, everybody turned their checks back in. I think one person kept his check, and then he found out everybody turned their check back in, and he mailed it back to me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I was like, well, if I've got people that are willing to do this to be a part of the Masters Hall of Fame, the way they're giving back to the Masters Hall of Fame, they don't need to charge for it because I make enough revenue from the dinner. I mean, that's the reason we do the dinner the way we do it, is it covers the cost. So we didn't charge for seminars, and it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing. We may have to go back there someday, but as we speak right now, you know, our revenue from the dinner, it pays for everything we need to do. Now, at Long Beach, it may not, because at Long Beach we have a different, you know, it's not Anaheim Hilton, and it's not Costa Mesa Hilton, so there may be different fees, and we may end up having to pay for the room and do other things. That's why we would have to charge for those seminars. But this year, for sure, there is no fee for the seminars.
Very cool.
Or anything else, the radio interviews or anything. This is part of what we do as a Masters Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, very cool. Right. What you know, I've been talking so much, Steve Lou. What do you have for Auntie?
Well, I'm going to look at the time here. Oh, we've only got 10 minutes left. Well, since we only have about 10 minutes left, I do have a question. In your opinion, Hanshi, what do you see for the future of the Masters Hall of Fame? Like, if you could look forward, like, 20, 30 years, what would you like to see?
Oh, my gosh. We are going to – and that's a great question, because I ponder this all the time. You know, we set up a nonprofit structure.
Uh-huh.
So it is no longer a private entity. It's a nonprofit. And as we move forward, and we're developing the next group of leaders that come on, and we're grooming those leaders all the time. And, you know, we are going to pass that torch on to another great leader for the next generation. And it's not going to be for another 5-10 years for me. I like what I do too much to give it to somebody else right now. I always get involved in it. But, you know, sooner or later, I'm going to pass the mantle to somebody else. But what I'd like to see is the Masters Hall of Fame have a structure and a building, and, you know, the Masters Hall of Fame have its own museum, for lack of a better term, of inductees and of you know, everybody that was inducted, their written work would be in there. You know, a Masters Hall of Fame library would be really good, where your books we have a lot of authors in our organization, their books would be at the Masters Hall of Fame library. And there would be a film library where I know that Bob, you've been in a couple films. I don't know, Rashida, have you been in anything? Any film?
Just Walk On and Extra Experience and commercial. That's
okay.
It.
Well, I mean, there's stuff there. There's stuff there. Like Robert Parham is a big film guy. We've got Don Warner that has a host of films. Of course, our Camacho. And, you know, there's just a host of people that are involved in the Masters Hall of Fame to have written work or video work, and I'd love to have a library of that stuff where people that came to the Masters Hall of Fame museum, they could go in and watch a movie. There would be a private viewing room where they could plug in a movie and do what they wanted to do. So that's kind of like if I had all the money in the world, that's where we would be at. And I don't know where that would be. California is really expensive to do something like that. It would have to probably be in a state that was more financially feasible to get it done. And I don't know where that would be yet, but that's what I'd like to see in 30 years is the organization have a hard structure and not an office in my house.
I'm sure your wife would love that too.
Yes, she would. Eyesight of me, I have an ego wall, just like all other martial artists. I have an ego wall. Well, my ego wall turned into an ego room, and now I have two ego rooms. So the wife wants to move my ego room out of the house and maybe into a separate building, and that's what gave me the idea of, you know, that this would be a good thing to do a museum like the Sports Karate Museum or the Martial Arts Museum in Burbank, something like that, specifically for the Masters Hall of Fame, but set it up as a library also, so there, it has a more dynamic feel to it.
That is awesome. I'd like to see that too.
Cool. Yeah.
I would love to see
that. We need about
$4
million.
Yeah.
You know anybody for a check?
Right.
We'll have to get a hold of Budweiser or Coca-Cola or Pepsi or something.
those guys. So basically, you know, to tell everybody that the Masters is a completely non-profit organization. We're not in it for the money. That is the biggest myth we have to dispel. None of us are paid. We all do it for the love of the art, the love of the community.
That's right.
So come out. I mean, it's a great event. It gets better every single year.
Where else can you go and get seminars?
The people listening are on the fence, do I want to go or do I not want to go? You know, I get this every year. We get people like the Abad Sisters, people like Rosita, people like Bob, that not only come back, they come back and want to help.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to be more involved. And what can I do to help you? I get that year after year after year. And, you know, and it's almost a challenge to meet that expectation. How do I let everybody help with the Masters Hall of Fame? Because now I got to manage all that and make sure that they help at the level where I need help. So, you know, you will come, you'll enjoy yourself, you will have a great, great time. You'll meet great people like my beautiful wife and my children and Rosita and Bob, and, you know, you'll meet great people. We run along like crazy for those 2 days, but it is a great event. You'll truly enjoy it.
Yes, definitely. So listeners out there, if, like Hanshi Dan said, if you are on the fence, do check it out, you know, especially if you're in the neighborhood of Orange County. I mean, come on out. Where else can you get free seminars?
Right.
And
so not just free seminars. We're talking about seminars from, we had Dan Severin there last year, Don Wilson there last year. When the last time you've been to a seminar with Dan Severin or Don Wilson or any of the other people, that Bob White, that you got to go
exactly. Exactly.
You know, these are great, great martial artists with years and years. I mean, I know Bob charges, you know, $30, $40 for seminars per person at his dojo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dan Severin charges probably $100 a piece for his seminars.
Right.
So,
yeah.
It's a good thing. Jeff Anderson, one of my senior guys, travels the world doing these type of seminars all over the world. All expenses paid. This guy makes his living from doing seminars and stuff like
mm-hmm.
this. He's a force protection guy, and he does force protection stuff, but that's how he makes his living. These are world-class martial artists and stuff that you would never see, get the opportunity to do, and you get to do it at the Masters Hall of Fame for the price of a dinner ticket.
Exactly, exactly. So, yeah, come on out, listeners. It'll be a great evening. Wow, well, what a great show. Thank you so much for joining us, Hanshi Dan. What a awesome time that we had. What do you think, Bob? Just totally cool.
I love it. Even with the technical difficulties, this is a great, great show, and I'm past my freak-out state since your mic came back.
Oh, yeah, well, my phone came back. And, you know, stupid mic channel. I don't know. I'll have to figure that out. I'll have to write an email to Blog Talk Radio and find out what's going on with it. All right.
Shameless plug. I have a radio show. It's Kicking It Old School. It's on KCA 1050 AM. You can get there by kcaradio.com. We're on a Tuesdays at 2 o'clock, and we also have blogs out there. Not blogs, but podcasts. We have great interviews on there. You guys are normal, regular featured people on our radio show, so if you want to hear more from Bob and Rosita as guests instead of hosts, you can listen to our show.
Awesome. Yeah,
excellent.
KCAA 1050 AM. Just look up KCAA1050.com, I think. Tuesdays at 2.
Yep.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Hanshi Dan, and thank you so much, Bob, for being patient with me and my stupid microphone. All right, everyone. We'll see everybody next week at 6 p.m. normal time, Pacific time, actually. All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you all next week. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.